Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. So you've got this idea. It is a great idea. You love your business idea and you're super jazzed about it, but you might not really be clear on how to bring that idea to fruition. What better way than to learn from those who have already gone through the journey of starting and scaling and maybe even selling their own company? Two startup founders and angel investors, Catalina Daniels and James Sherman, interviewed a whole bunch of founders to share their advice. They wrote a book about it. It is called Smart Startups, What Every Entrepreneur Needs to Know, advice from 18 Harvard Business School founders. They join us now from New York City. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hi, Bruce.
Harvard Business School is a storied institution, but I would say it's better known for churning out Goldman investment bankers and McKinsey consultants than startup success stories. Why did you decide to go fishing in this particular pond?
Thank you for that question, Bruce. But the question used to be known for leadership and top-notch jobs at Goldman and McKinsey and so forth. That was back in the 90s. By now, it's really known for entrepreneurship. And if you look at the stats, Harvard Business School has the most founders with unicorns of all business schools in the US. That is in absolute terms. If you would look at it in relative terms, Stanford still has somewhat of an edge, but Harvard Business School is a bigger school. So in absolute numbers, it's a school that's pretty known.
I love that you're weaving the quant into it. Jim, how did you choose the interviewees? Was everyone a home run entrepreneur, or did you sprinkle in a few with humiliating flame outs just to make it interesting?
Well, I would not characterize any as humiliating flare outs, but we definitely have a wide breadth. So we have those that achieved unicorn status, like Rent the Runway and Gilt and Blue Apron. So a couple that went public, a number that were sold for hundreds of millions of dollars. But we also had those that did not succeed. They either had a fire sale or they were forced to shut down. We've had some that are continuing to operate and doing well enough, but have not exited yet. So we really had all different types of exits, some that did not, some that had huge success, some you would characterize, not really successful, at least as far as the investors are concerned. But back to your other question earlier, I want to point out, believe it or not, 50% of HBS grads do become entrepreneurs within 20 years of graduation. So there's a very high percentage that
they may have earned their stripes in the grind at one of the sweatshops, but then decided to go out and build something.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. So there are many different definitions of what an entrepreneur actually is. What's one that resonated with you the most?
I think what resonates the most is all of these entrepreneurs had passion to create something. That is fundamental. You have to have the passion to want to create something new, innovative, have control over your life. Clearly, this is a key driver. You also need resilience as an entrepreneur. That's a very important ingredient. And the other third one, which was very interesting when we spoke to the entrepreneurs, is knowing when to jump, knowing when you're going to actually make that jump into this, can be a bit of a scary proposition if you're leaving a very safe job. So these ingredients are super important, and it's really what you need in order to be to venture off into becoming an entrepreneur. And some are born that way with these ingredients, but one of the surprising lessons is that you don't have to be born with them. You certainly can learn these qualities.
Well, let's continue on with that theme, because in your introduction, you talk about how many of the interviews destroyed preconceived notions of entrepreneurship. Can you give me some other examples?
Other examples, I was thinking, born an entrepreneur is a preconceived notion. As Jim said, it doesn't need to be that way. Another example is, as an angel investor or in the VC world or whatever, there is this preconceived notion that there is an ideal team to start a venture. And that is two or three co-founders, equal co-founders, one of which being the CEO and then typically the CTO. And if you have a third one, a chief marketing officer or chief operating officer, depending on the business you wanna build. Our interviews entirely busted that. What we got out of our interviews is find the team that's right for you, because we had solo founders. We had teams of five people recruited by a headhunter. We had a mom and her son. We had best friends. We had a married couple. You just name it. And so we have this entire chapter about find the right team for yourself. What fits for yourself? Do you want to go solo? Do you want to go with somebody else? If you go with somebody else, should it be a co-founder, an equal co-founder, or a junior co-founder? Or do you want to hire somebody? Based on our research and interviews, it can all work out. But what is critical is that if you go with somebody else, you basically make sure that you share the vision and the values. Mm. Because if you don't, you're going to run into trouble extremely fast.
One other place where you can run into trouble, you've used this phrase, the struggles of explosive growth, which sounds like a great problem to have, but is a problem nonetheless. What are some of the challenges that entrepreneurs face when it comes to growth?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. In fact, we say it's the struggles of growth or the struggles of explosive growth, because both are actually challenging for the entrepreneur. If you don't have growth, well, you've got to figure out how you're going to get on the growth curve. It comes down to execution, which sounds straightforward enough, but it's very challenging. You need to get on the growth curve and figure out what is going to drive your sales rapidly. In addition to that, you've got the grind and the chaos. And it's not that it's any one thing that may be challenging when you're looking at the operations, for example. It's what Josh Hicks referred to as, in his case, with his business, Plated, when they deliver meal kits, and it's pre-portioned ingredients. And there's nothing inherently complex about selecting ingredients, chopping them up, putting them in a box, and shipping them to a customer. But doing it every week to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of customers, and changing recipes week in and week out, managing that supply chain, managing the technology, having the staff, the hiring in place to actually fulfill the orders, that's what becomes challenging at scale. And this is what breaks. And a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, think it's very easy to do, but it's not. It's very complicated when you scale up.
The other part of that, and that's not to be underestimated, is that once growth kicks in, it becomes a different ballgame. And, you know, the grind and the chaos that Jimmy's talking about is very often a challenge for the team, because that's not what they were hired to do in the first place. So going from zero to one as a business is very different than going from one to 100 or 100 to 1,000, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And that's a real challenge.
You talk about how the business model is not cast in iron. And we think about a company like GE, whose model has changed significantly over decades, even Amazon. Most people don't know about Amazon Web Services. Like, why? You make money on that? How do these entrepreneurs know that they need to shift, change, hop on a different horse?
Well, I think in the business model case, as we say, it's not cast in iron. And what we mean is you have got to anticipate, or if you don't anticipate what's around the corner, then you are going to be subjecting yourself to potential failure. So that's very, very important to see around the corner what may be coming that is either a threat to your business or, for that matter, an opportunity. It's very, very important. And now one of the aspects of this is, we talk about in the book how it's important to find your 2.0. And what we mean is you may have gotten to a certain level of growth, a certain tier of revenue, but you may max out and you need to figure out how are you getting to the next tier? How are you getting to your 2.0? So for example, Bespoke Post, who's in, we interviewed the founders, they grew to over $100 million in a subscription business for men's e-commerce. but it was capping out. They needed to find a new engine of growth. What is the 2.0? So they launched a satellite brand and designed a series of luggage products, which has been doing very, very well. It'll do another 30 million or more this year.
Wow.
So it's very important to figure out your 2.0 in order to propel that growth. And finally, last point I'd say is if you have to know when to pivot. And a pivot is required either, as we said, either to find an opportunity that is there that you hadn't thought about, or to fix a problem. And so pivoting is part and parcel for all founders' journeys.
You could summarize the reasons for pivoting around three themes. One is growth does not materialize or kind of levels off. That's one reason to pivot. Two is you've got a business model that doesn't work and you're never going to be profitable. So in today's environment, and I would even say brutal environment when it comes to fundraising, profitability has become much more important. So if you have no sight for profitability, you might want to think of a pivot. And then the third reason, and that's a big thing in our book as well, because everybody talked about it, is what we call the uncontrollables. You might do absolutely everything right, and then you wake up one morning and something happens, and an uncontrollable might be negative, but it might also be positive. Something happens. Think about COVID. I mean, how many businesses suffered from COVID? Some benefited, like Zoom, for example. I mean, that was a gift from God. But so you might do absolutely everything right, and then one day you get up and the environment has changed and you need to pivot, because otherwise you won't survive.
Really interesting stories in the book, lots of great examples, and I appreciate you both taking the time to talk to us about it today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Bruce.
The book is called Smart Startups, What Every Entrepreneur Needs to Know, Advice from 18 Harvard Business School Founders. Its authors, Catalina Daniels and James Sherman.